the divine souls. So far we've covered the first 9 chapters of the Gita in this series. In chapter 9, there was a lot of important material. And at the end, we saw that Sri Krishna said, whatever we do, we should offer all of our actions to Him. Meaning that while we perform the action, we should be doing it with this aim, that this action should please Him. Or with this motivation, that I'm doing this action because this is going to help me with my devotion, so I can attain Krishna in this life. In the 10th chapter, Sri Krishna describes the process of God realization.
Excuse me.
He says, Machitta madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam kathayantascha mam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. First he says what you have to do to progress towards God realization and to get God realization, and then he describes what happens when you get God realized. In the first verse he says, mat chitta. It means lovingly attach your heart to Him. So here he's describing bhakti. He's describing loving devotion. Mat chitta. Our chit, our heart, it has a loving nature. We're always lovingly remembering something.
Jehi te kachhu nij swarath hoi ta paramamrita karai sab koi.
Tulsidas ji says, whatever we believe will give us happiness, we naturally think about that person or that thing a lot. So this is called chintan, or remembrance. Doing that same kind of remembrance for God creates attachment in Him. Kripaluji Maharaj, whom I told you, all of whatever I'm sharing with you is only what I've been able to learn from him. He always says that in order to become God-realized, you don't have to learn a single new skill. You already have all the skills you need to become God-realized, you just have to apply them in the right way. So what does our mind do? What is its skill? It seeks happiness, and wherever it believes it will find happiness, it constantly remembers that thing. Then how are we going to get our mind to think of God? Because whatever you think of, that thing you get attached to. The only way that we'll get our mind to think of God is if our mind starts believing that there's happiness in God. Otherwise, why would our mind think of God? Then still, anytime we think of God, we'll only ask Him for the world. That's a key point and a key measurement of a person's understanding. When they pray to God, are they asking God for the world? That's pakka pramana. It's solid proof that that person believes there's happiness in the world, not in God. If he believed there was happiness in God, why would he ask for the world? This is after receiving all the knowledge. We all understand, we've all been told, that God is Anand, God is Satchit Anand. Anand means divine bliss, perfect happiness. Yet, when we pray to God, who is the form of happiness, we ask Him for the world, which is akin to going to a chappal shop and asking for the best mitai. Or the other way around. Since God, basically God's shop, what does God have? He has the best Mitai. In his shop, he has the best sweets. Divine Ras. The nectar of divine bliss. God is selling, or you can say, giving away, free of charge. But you have to go there to receive it. So we go to God who is giving away the unlimited bliss of his divine abode, which is like going to the best sweet shop in the whole world. And what do we ask for? We ask for sandals or shoes. We go to God and we ask him for the world, which doesn't make much sense from a couple of points of view. Number one, we've already experienced this world so many times. Have we not understood yet that perfect happiness is not in the world? It's our own experience. We don't need anyone else to tell us. Think yourself. How much have you enjoyed in this world? And those moments of enjoyment, how much do they last before it's interrupted or replaced by tension or sadness or loss? And even while you're enjoying, you're not perfectly happy. You wish you had more. Even in the moment of enjoyment, you want more. So this is the nature of worldly happiness. And what are we doing? We go to God who has perfect happiness, which means unlimited in amount and everlasting. And instead of asking him for that, we ask him for more of this, which has never satisfied us anyway. And even if he, let's say, God just decided one day, okay, whatever the people of this world ask me for, I'm going to give it to them that moment. So you ask him for $1 million, you become a millionaire. You ask him to become president, you become president. Just like that. Even if God fulfilled every single desire you had every moment, you still wouldn't be satisfied because it's just more of the world, more of the same that didn't satisfy you. We look at those who have more than us and we make a wrong assumption. We assume that they must be happy. Oh, the president must be happy. He has so much power. Oh, that billionaire must be happy. He has so much fame and wealth. But their inside is the same as your inside. Dissatisfied, and they're full of tension and always looking for more happiness. So, up to what point are we going to go on looking? Indro vanchati brahma padam. Even Indra, the king of the celestial gods, even he looks at Brahma's status and thinks, oh, he has so much more fame and power than I do, and luxury in his abode. I want that. Even Indra is unhappy with what he has. And that's what we go to God and ask him for. So this one word, mat chitta, attach your mind to God, it's a big deal. It's one word. It means everything. That's why we say, man eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayo. Our scriptures tell us in many, many places, the mind alone is the cause of bondage and liberation. If you attach your mind in the world, you're bound. We are all bound right now. We just multiply that bondage. And if you attach your mind to God, you're relieved from all the bondages. Bondage of Maya, bondage of birth and death, bondage of karma, all of that is released. But you have to attach your mind to God. And when will your mind get attached to God? When you start thinking of God as your potential source of happiness. We are swarthi, definitely. But swarath sancha jiva kar eha man kram bachan ram padneha. Our true swarth, our true self-interest is in God. We're all selfishly looking for happiness, are we not? We all want happiness. But we keep looking in the world for it. We look to worldly people, and we look to worldly entertainments, worldly attainments. But we don't find what we really want. When we turn our search towards God, we're not becoming less selfish. We're still selfish. We want our happiness, but we want it from God. And since He has that happiness, so we can actually get it from Him. It's the difference between churning milk and churning lime water, which looks like milk. This world looks like it has happiness. It holds the hope of giving us happiness. Or it holds the promise of happiness. But just like, you know, the person who sees, oh, this person, he churned that white liquid, which was actually milk, and he got butter out of it. I'm going to do the same. And he found another white liquid, which was lime water. And he churned that. For years and years, he never got butter. So when there's no true happiness in the world, it doesn't matter how long we keep looking, we're not going to find it. But when we turn towards God, then we get the correct result. Our true self-interest is served by surrendering to God. He has happiness, we want happiness. So when we realize that, or to the extent we realize that, our mind will become attached to Him. It means that the path of bhakti is about constantly thinking these simple truths, these simple spiritual truths. Only He is mine. Only He has true happiness. Think that again and again and again. However many times you think it, that much you will become attached to God. Every thought has power, you know. How many times have we truly thought, even this, see, only Krishna is mine. My mother in this world, my father in this world, are they truly mine? No, because I have to leave them when I die. Or maybe they'll die before me, then I'm left without them. I won't have them in my next life. Or even if I did, I won't remember. So what's the difference? My children, they're not mine either. Because all of those relationships last at most for one lifetime. Sometimes we willingly end them even before then if we can't get along with someone. But how many times have we truly thought, no one in this world is eternally mine, only Krishna is eternally mine? We might have never thought that deeply in our whole life. So what if you thought it 50 times in one day? That's the same process we use to get attached in the world. You think, this person is mine. He's mine. He's mine. That's how we get attached. And that's why we're so attached in this world that even when we pray to God, we ask Him for the world. We develop that attachment through repeatedly thinking about that. So start thinking about Krishna that way. What if you thought that 10 times in a day? It has a big effect. It's a powerful thought. Just those two things. He alone is mine. And He alone is the source of perfect happiness. So if I surrender to Him, I'll become perfectly happy. You think that as many times a day as you can, and you watch what happens in here. Your heart will start getting attached to Him. That's our sadhana. That's the effort we have to put in to attach our mind to Krishna. Mat chitta mat gata prana. He says, prana means your life. You should feel that your life is for me, Krishna is saying. And why not? Just like Sugriv says in the Ramayana, Deha dhare kare ya phal bhai bhajiya ram sab kaam bihai. He's talking to Hanumanji and Nal and Neel and Jamvant, all the warriors before going to battle with Ravana. And he says, you don't worry if you die in this battle or not. You know why? The point of having this body is to get to do bhakti to Ram. So giving your life for Him, that's the goal of your life. So leaving all the material desires, worship Ram. We should feel that this life, this human life, is for finding God. Mat prana. Bodhayanta parasparam. We all like to talk. We like to socialize. We like to be with people. Here Sri Krishna says, when you're with people, why not try to associate with those people who want to talk about me? Bodhayanta parasparam kathayantascha mam nityam. Bodhayanta means talk philosophy. Kathayanta, talk about my lilas. What do we normally talk about? Even if we meet someone just for a few minutes, normally we're complaining. It's true. And maybe that's because we think the other person doesn't want to hear how happy we are, that, oh, he's probably miserable, so why should I tell him how happy I am? I'll share my miseries with him. My boss is like this, my co-worker is like this, my husband's like this, my wife is like this, my kids did this today. So we tend to complain or gossip. We talk bad things about other people with our free time. Sri Krishna says, why not use that time, try to associate with people who are interested in talking about Sri Krishna, and use the time in that way to develop more attachment in your mind towards Him. Tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Tushyanti means be satisfied in that, and ramanti means to immerse yourself, to enjoy thinking about Krishna's lilas, chanting His name. That might take time to get to that point. You know, normally when we want to feel comforted, you all have something that you turn to. Maybe it's your favorite food, your favorite person, watching TV, whatever it may be. But here Sri Krishna says, why don't you feel comforted in remembering me? We all look for enjoyment in this world. He says, Ramanticha, why don't you look for enjoyment in remembering me? Think about my lilas. Initially, when you start doing devotion, it might seem more like work. You understand that Krishna is happiness. I have to attach my mind to Him, so I have to keep thinking about Him. So you sit and you want to meditate on Krishna. So you form an image in your mind, like I explained, Rup Dhyan. You form an image of His beautiful divine form as best you can, whatever comes naturally to you. You try to think of His lilas, which are all recorded in the Bhagavatam and revealed also by saints like Suradasji and others. But in the beginning, your mind might not feel much ras in that. It's not feeling like a ramanti. Like, when you're doing it, you're not feeling like, oh yes, this is so nice. It feels like work, maybe, in the beginning. That's because our heart is not purified very much. There's still many layers of impurity, worldly desires and attachments and past sins that have to be cleaned out. And how are they cleaned out? By doing devotion, by attaching our mind to Krishna. So you have to do that work. Eventually, the mind gets clean enough that you actually feel nice when you think of Krishna. You think of His lila and it feels good in your heart. Then it means your mind is really starting to taste the bliss of Krishna's name and His lilas. Then it becomes easier to spend time thinking about Him because you're really enjoying it. In the beginning, it might feel like work, but you have to do it anyway, based on your intellectual understanding. Eventually, you get the experience of devotion. Then it becomes easier. This is how someone progresses on the path. You don't need any new skill. You turn the nature of your mind to seek happiness and to lovingly remember those you believe will give you happiness. You turn that nature towards Krishna. and lovingly remember him as much as you can. That purifies your heart and develops attachment in him. Then what happens? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. He says this individual who priti means lovingly, priti purvakam bhajatam. He worships me lovingly like this, lovingly remembering me all the time. Satatam, all the time. Then what happens? His mind gets totally purified. 100%. Then Sri Krishna says, Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. At the moment of God realization, you receive his divine power. It's called Swarup Shakti. It enters your mind because now your mind is 100% attached to him. And your mind has become 100% pure, but it's still material. It's material, but pure. Now when Swarup Shakti enters your mind becomes divine. So he says, Dadami, I give buddhi yogam. I give my divine mind to you. The same divine mind Krishna has, he gives to us. Or you can say he divinizes our mind. He makes it divine. Then, yena mam upayanti te, then you can know me. You can experience me. How do you experience Krishna? With your five senses, which also became divine through his Swarup Shakti. So he divinizes your mind, he divinizes your senses, then you can see him, you can smell, taste, touch, hear, the same way you experience this world. But when you experience this world, you're only experiencing material things with your material senses. When you experience Krishna, you're experiencing the form of divine bliss with your divine senses. So you experience divine bliss. This is the process of devotion and the process of God realization. The Guru is also part of this. Krishna does not mention the Guru here. He mentioned him previously in the fourth chapter when he said, Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshyanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshina. He says, Arjuna, if you want to know God, you need a Guru. That Guru must be jnanina and tattva darshina. Jnanina means he has a total knowledge of all the scriptures. And tattva means God. Darshina means to see. He must have seen God. Then he's qualified to be a Guru. So surrender to such a Guru. Ask him questions. Serve him. And over time he will be able to impart knowledge to you. And he'll help you follow the path of devotion. So Guru's part of this process also. And in fact, it's the Guru who in the end gives you that Swarup Shakti, which divinizes your mind and reveals God's divine form. That's another key point, that a true saint is required for that final step to attain God. These are just two verses from the 10th chapter. In addition, Sri Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhau matta sarvam pravartate. O Arjun, this whole world is from me, this whole world and all the souls, and pravartate, it's existing through me or because of me. We talked about this yesterday, but he reiterates this in every single chapter. I told you that in every chapter there are certain points that are repeated. Here Sri Krishna reminds Arjuna that the souls and the world come from him. But that doesn't mean that they're not eternal. He didn't create them. Remember, there's a cycle of pralaya and srishti. Pralaya means the dissolution of the universe and srishti means the manifestation of the universe. So Krishna pulls the universe within him
yatha yathorna nabhi srijate grinate cha.
Veda says, just like a spider spins a web and then eats it, and then spins it and eats it. Same way God produces the world and pulls it in, produces the world and pulls it in. He sends the souls out to be born in the world and He brings them back in during Mahapralaya. And while they're out, meaning while the world is manifested and the souls are living in the world and performing actions, everything is happening through God's grace. But remember, this doesn't mean God is controlling everything. God is upholding the existence of Maya, and He's keeping this Mayic energy activated, but Maya functions according to its own material qualities. And He's giving life to the souls, but He's not controlling their actions. We talked about this yesterday. So He says, they're active because of me, but at the same time, He's not controlling our actions. Then Arjuna asks Him, he says, Krishna, can you please tell me more about your almightiness? Your almighty greatness. So at this point, Krishna explains to him metaphorically. There's quite a sequence, quite a long sequence, where he says, Ahamatma gudakesha sarvabhuta sthita. Ahamadishcha madhyancha bhutanamanta evacha. He says, I am the soul in every living being. I was there in the beginning, before everything. I'm there in the in between, in the middle. And I'll be there in the end when everything is gone. In the beginning means before the creation of the universe. Madhya means now. And ant means after, when Krishna again dissolves the universe. He was there before, He's here now, He'll be there after. He goes on to say, telling, you know, how is Krishna going to explain how great He is? He's God. His greatness is unlimited. What is He going to say? So, he tried to explain metaphorically. He said, Arjuna, understand like this. Out of all the, he gave so many examples. Out of the 8 vasus, I am fire, meaning I'm the best. Out of all the bodies of water, I'm the ocean. Out of all rivers, I'm Ganga. Out of all the elephants, I'm Airavat, Indra's elephant. Out of all the warriors, I'm Ram. Out of all the Rudras, I am Shankar Bhagavan. He even says, out of all vices, I am gambling. Out of all the Vedas, I am Samved. Out of all beasts, I am the lion. Among men, I am the king. Among devtas, I am Indra. In other words, he's saying, I am the best of everything. And he said this in the beginning, Ahamatma Gudakesha Sarvabhuta Shayasthita. I reside in the heart of every soul as his Atma. Again, this could be a confusing verse, but based on what you learned yesterday, you can understand. There are places in the Vedas where the word Atma actually is for God. And there are places where the word Atma is for the individual soul. Because he's Paramatma, right? He's also Atma, he's Paramatma. And we're also Atma, we're Jivatma. We're individual souls who are Ansh of his soul power. And he's Paramatma, he's giving life, one single God, giving life to unlimited souls. So here he says, I am the soul residing in every being. It means he's the soul of your soul. He's the most important part of you. He's giving life to you. After explaining all of this, in the end, he says to Arjuna,
Yadyadvibhutimatsattvam śrīmadurjitamevava tattadevavagacchatvam mamatejonshasambhavam.
Hey Arjun, what can I tell you? I can't go on explaining forever, just understand this much. That whatever greatness, whatever is illustrious, whatever is brilliant, whatever is powerful in this world, it is all receiving that greatness from one unch, one tiny fraction of my power. And in the end he says, in fact Arjun, you're not going to understand by me just telling you anything. How long can I go on explaining?
Athava vahunaitena gimgyatena tavarjuna gimgyatena.
What will you know by listening to me explaining it?
Vishtabhyahamidam kritsna mekanshena sthito jagat.
Just know this, Arjun, that I omnipresently envelop every particle of this whole universe with a fraction of my power. So, you can imagine what is my almightiness. This is how the 10th chapter ends. In the beginning of the 11th chapter, Shri Krishna is questioned by Arjun. Actually, Arjun says,
Mohoyam vigato mama.
O Krishna, all of my doubts, my infatuation, my confusion, it's gone. In other words, Arjuna is fully surrendered to Shri Krishna.
Drashtumichhami te rupa maishwaram purushottama.
And Shri Krishna, I want to see your almighty form. You're telling me I won't understand by you explaining it, so why don't you show me? See, that's the difference between theory and experience. Just intellectually knowing something is not enough. You have to experience it for yourself. Then you get the real knowledge. So, Shri Krishna first said,
Natumam shakya se drashtu manenaiva svachakshusha.
Arjun, you can't see me with your eyes. Remember I told you a few days ago, when your kids ask you, if God is everywhere, why can't I see Him? You tell them, because God is divine and you need divine eyes to see Him. Here Shri Krishna tells Arjuna that you can't perceive my divinity with your material eyes. You can't see me as I really am with your material eyes. But since you are fully surrendered to me,
Divyam dadami te chakshu pashyame yogamaishvaram.
I'll give you divine eyes. And with those divine eyes, you'll see my divine almighty status. That's what Arjuna asked for, and that's what he got. So what did he see? He described in many, many verses. So what did Arjuna see when Krishna graced him in this way? We'll hear that tomorrow.